it's definitely been a search to find inner peace and inner happiness. As hard as lives are of those families who have special needs children, I think there are some secrets to life that we get to find. And some of them is finding joy in these little things.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
Well, today I'm very excited to have a very special guest on the show, Tiffany Martinka, who goes by the moniker Prairie Pretty on Instagram. How are you doing there today, Tiffany?
Good. Thanks for having me, Dan. I've listened to some of your podcasts, and some of the people you have on your podcast, I'm thankful to be kind of part of that.
Awesome. You're definitely amongst good companies on the show. We want to set the stage. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, the farm, and who you are.
Okay. Grew up on a mixed grain and cattle farm. Knew I loved the farm. I knew I wanted to go into agriculture after high school. A few reasons why I wanted to go into agriculture. I knew that we'd always need agriculture in our world. And I also love that we need it in every part of the world. So fast forward in university, that's where I met my husband, where a lot of people do. We moved out to his home farm after university, or not quite to his home farm. We moved to town right near there. And the goal was always that we would farm. So we worked at him rolling into my father-in-law's third of the farm.
So when I asked you what your big theme was, what your big overarching story was, I had a bit of an idea, but you told me your story is one of resilience. What does that mean to you?
I think resiliency has become part of my life because we've had to shift and adapt and change and become resilient on our farm and in our life because of the challenges that have come into our story.
So we're going to hear about that today. Walk me through having a career in agriculture and then the circumstances that led you to be at home, working on the ranch, and dealing with some of the special circumstances that you're talking about in context of that resiliency.
For sure. So I love the ag industry. There are some of the best people in the agriculture industry, and it was so fun to work with farmers and retail and industry. I worked approximately 10 years in the ag industry. I was a working mom. We started our family, and we were learning to juggle me working my ag career and my husband full-time farming. So on our farm, we run a grain and broiler chick operation. So with our broiler chicks, we raise 100,000 chicks at a time. So there's no shortage of work to do on the farm. Plus, working in ag, there can be a lot of travel. It took a lot of juggling. But you know what? We did it because we love it. And I enjoyed working. My husband loves the farm. It's just what we did. We put our nose to the grindstone and we made it work.
So tell me about the circumstances regarding your coming home to the farm full time.
Right. So this is kind of an interesting part of it because I never ever imagined to be a stay-at-home mom or even a farm wife. And I think that even partly makes me emotional because I just never ever thought that that is what I would do. And here I am sitting as a stay-at-home mom on the farm. In my mind, I always wanted to be the professional. I always wanted to accomplish something career-wise, but life had other plans for me. All I had ever known growing up was the women in my life were stay-at-home moms. And I just had it in my head that I was not going to be that. I wanted to be something different, but it's funny how you come full circle and you always end up being more like your parents than you realize. But anyways, we wanted to add a third child to our family. And My daughter was born December 18th, 2016, and she was the most beautiful little baby, the happiest, like, and she's the cutest. And I'll show you pictures if you want to see that for sure, because I think you'll agree. Those first 6 months of her life were some of my happiest times when I look back. Life was perfect. At 6 months old, she had her first seizure. At the time, everybody kept telling us it was a one-time thing. These things happen, they grow out of it. Our story did not end that way. Her seizures continued to progress. She started having them more and more often, and she started having multiple types of seizures show up. So by the time it came back to me ending my maternity leave in the fall, I think it was like end of November, we were in the hospital so often that it was just, there was no way you could go back to work. And, oh, it does make me emotional. You're like making me break it all up. I think it's been shoved so deep inside. At the time, I couldn't even think of it. And I think this is why it brings up emotions, because I couldn't even process at the time what I was maybe giving up, because you focus your attention on your child and what's best for them. So at that time, it was quitting my job to care for her. We live in rural Saskatchewan. Childcare is already a shortage. To find somebody who would have the knowledge to manage a medically complex child, there's no way you're going to find that either. So, I mean, it was like we only had one option, and that was for me to quit my job. And as much as I love working, I love my children more. So that is where we ended up, with me as a stay-at-home mom, something I never ever thought that was in the cards for me.
So when you first experienced this seizure, it's probably similar to some of what people are going through right now. Your whole world changes. What you thought it was is something quite different. What was the transition? How did it put things in perspective for you when your daughter's illness manifested itself?
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of changes that went on with myself and my family. That first year, we were just in survival mode, and I was trying to figure things out. When you read of your daughter's, when you read of a child's, their diagnosis, I first read a Dravet syndrome. My whole world came crashing down, because you see your perfectly healthy little baby, and you read this diagnosis, and it tells you that they're slowly going to decline over the years. They'll have developmental delays, that things are only going to get worse. It's a progressive disease. And I was the one who read of this diagnosis, and I'm the one who pushed our neurologist to test her for it. It's a genetic mutation of the SCN1A gene. So the SCN1A gene is a sodium channel in your body. She only has half the sodium channels in her body, and that is why it causes the epilepsy. So all the changes that I was experiencing, I was researching for my child. I was advocating for her. And I think when you have children, part of being a parent is you are dreaming for them. You have hopes and dreams for them. And when you read of this, you don't have those hopes and dreams anymore, because her future is laying right there in front of you, as she will be developmentally challenged down the road. I mean, unless we come up with a cure. So where I was struggling is, how do I find happiness now? Where do you find happiness, and how can I start looking for that? And what I realized is happiness comes in the tiny little things. It comes when you can live in the moment, when you're not always thinking about the future or maybe the past. It's when you can enjoy your hot cup of coffee, you know, or sitting and playing with your child. That's when the true forms of happiness come, and when you can stay in your mind in the moment. So I had to really learn all that when I had to quit my job, our income was cut in half. So a lot of things people think bring them joy by purchasing and consuming, well, I couldn't purchase and consume anymore. Those things that I thought brought me joy were no longer. So I had to completely flip my life to find this newfound happiness. And it couldn't include some of those things that I thought brought me joy. I searched to find inner peace and inner happiness. And as to special needs children, I think there are some secrets to life that we get to find. And some of them is finding joy in these little things and slowing down and learning to live for the moment. And when I reflect on a lot of these things that people call self-care, what are those things doing? It's keeping you in the moment. Oh, do a puzzle. It's making you focus on the moment. Exercise, you're focusing on your moment. Read a book. Any method of self-care is kind of making your brain and your thoughts live in that moment and enjoy that moment. And I think I just had to be fast-tracked to that with what we went through. And I am thankful for that.
Well said. A lot of wisdom you unpacked there. And unfortunately, that's only earned by learning it the hard way, isn't it? So when you talk about healthcare, how you grow through some of those challenges, and I commend you guys for the shift that must have been required. And how does taking care of what's your daughter's name?
Natalie.
How does caring for Natalie fit into the context of what you guys are doing on the farm?
So I think when, you know, before Natalie, if I would kind of think about being a stay-at-home farm wife, you imagine just tagging along on the farm, being involved in just, you know, hauling your kids along with you. With Natalie, we can't do that. She, because of her syndrome, it also, she has other spin-off challenges other than just seizures. So she has something called ataxia. It affects her mobility. So she doesn't walk very well. She's always stumbling and falling. She also is red flagged for ADHD. So her attention span isn't quite there. And I don't know if that's because seizures or all the medications she's on. And then sleep plays a huge factor for epileptics and epileptic kids. So our schedule revolves around Natalie. I give medications 3 times a day. She has naps every day and she has to be in bed by 8 p.m. So when you factor all those into play in your day, we can't just be running out the door to hop on the tractor with the guys or whatnot. We really have to plan our days accordingly to make sure that she's getting the best care possible. And then kind of like, because, well, she's also a 3-year-old too. Like,
yeah, know, throw that in on top.
It's not easy to bring a 3-year-old along to do some of this stuff and then add on some of her challenges. And it's so frustrating. But sometimes easier just to stay home and make the most of it at home. So that is what we've been doing. I feel very fortunate, actually, that we are farming because my husband has been around in the home when a lot of her big seizures have happened, because we often have to rush off to ambulance. That's also another thing, living on the farm, that has prevented challenges for us with this syndrome of Natalie's, because we live a half an hour from the closest ambulance or hospital. And when she had seizures that have lasted an hour long, and when she starts seizing, we have to give her a rescue medication that it can affect respiratory, because it slows everything down to try to stop the seizure. Oh, and it makes me emotional again. But I was sure we were going to have to move off the farm. I was so sure, because it was so scary, and I felt like we needed to be close to medical care. When you see your daughter's lips turn blue and she's not breathing, The last thing you want to be is a half hour from medical help. The good news, though, she started a new medication shortly after we were kind of at the worst of it. And ever since then, she has not had her big scary seizures since starting it. So that's been a year and a half. Really been able to be thankful for where we're at, because before we started this new medication for her, we were rushing off by ambulance quite a few times.
When you think about the possibility of having to leave the farm, what goes through your mind?
You know, we're in our mid-30s, and it's you grow up dreaming that you'll end up on the farm, or that's what my husband wants to do. That is his goal, is to farm. And you have these dreams, and everything we've been working towards is to be here on the farm, to manage the farm. And then when I thought we would have to move off the farm, my first thought is that our family would be split up, because I thought I would have to stay in town with the kids, and then my husband would have to stay out here farm. And that's not what anybody wants. That's not what any family wants, to be split up. But in those times when you're in the thick of it, you are just, I mean, you're trying to keep your child alive. So you do what you got to do, and you make it work. As much as I didn't want that to happen, it's pretty traumatic to go through that. So you would have to do what you got to do. But I am so happy we didn't have to go that route. So amazing. Here we are, still on the farm.
Perfect. So it sounds like everything can be a little bit more challenging, obviously, with Natalie's condition. And you guys recently went on holidays. And that what initially seemed like a wonderful vacation in paradise kind of took a left turn into WTF just happened here.
Tell
us about that.
So my husband and I went on holiday this year, and we went on holiday last year. And last year was the first time we got away on hot holiday. That was my first hot holiday ever. But because of our situation, the stress, we're like, we have to make this work. We need time to ourselves. Like, we have to go. So this year we went again. We made it happen. It wasn't easy. The planning that goes into like having family care for my children and, you know, make sure the farm is covered. It's not easy to get away, but we're like, okay, we need this for ourselves. We have to go. So our holiday was scheduled from March 11th to March 18th. And leading up to March 11th, COVID started to ramp up in Canada, or even North America, I should say. And the days leading up to us leaving, I kind of felt like the thought crossed my mind, should we be canceling this trip? But at the time, we would have been canceling based on fear, because there was nothing concrete to cancel on. And we didn't have cancellation insurance, but I knew we had cancellation insurance with our credit card, right? But credit cards aren't going to refund your money because they're scared to go. You need like some sort of doctor's note. So we're like, no, we should go. I felt a little bit better about going because our flight was direct from Saskatoon to Punta Cana. If we had to go through Calgary or Toronto, I would have maybe been a little bit more leery. But I felt like it was going to be fine. I don't want to base my life living out of fear. I try really hard not to do that, especially with our situation. So we went. So that was Wednesday. When March 11th was a Wednesday. And I think it was Friday that we were down there. Am I allowed to swear on here?
Absolutely.
It's not even a bad swear.
For dramatic effect. You're allowed whatever you need to for dramatic effect.
No, it was Friday, and shit hit the fan on Friday. Right. And it was extremely stressful being down there when the world as we know it is completely changing back home. I think it was Friday that all the sports, like the NBA, NHL, like everybody started canceling and shutting down their season. And here's the other thing that made me a little bit more worried too. My husband's a pretty like straight shooter. He doesn't buy into a lot of drama or hype. But this particular COVID situation, he was talking to me about how it was making him feel and how he was feeling uneasy. And I was kind of like, oh, holy shit. Like, if he's a little bit worried, I'm like, oh my God, should I be worried now? Because this is not like him. So I think he saw the writing on the wall a little bit more than I did. We were in touch with family back home. My son's last hockey tournament was canceled. They weren't going to be going back to school. All this was happening while we're gone, and that's all we could think about. So we're like, oh God, do we try to get back home early now? So we did look into flights to go home early. And they could have got us home on Sunday, but we would have had to go through Toronto and get home, plus pay an extra like $1,500 to get us home. And again, we weighed our options. At that time, our flight was still scheduled to go home on Wednesday the 18th. And because it would have taken us through Toronto, I felt like, well, that seems like higher risk than just staying put and going straight to Saskatoon a couple days later. So we decided let's just ride it out. They're still like, they're probably going to try to get us home, right? So we decided to stick it out. We made the most of the weekend as best we could, but it was quite stressful with everything going on. And then I think it was Monday, the Prime Minister announced that all the flights were going to be funneled through the major airports, except for everything coming back from Mexico and the Caribbean. So we were still safe. Our flight was still scheduled home on Wednesday. So at that point, I felt like I could finally fully relax because our flight was still going to get home. And that was Monday. So like, honestly, our last day there was probably the best day because we knew we were going home the next day. It was still on schedule. And then it escalated the last couple days on our resort. The resort started operating at half capacity. You know, those huge, huge buffets they have, they were only filling half the station. There was five a la cartes. I think the last night there was only two open, and people were leaving, but no one was coming to the resort. So there was all the beach chairs to choose from. Like, you could start to see the numbers starting to dwindle. And then our last day there, we heard some interesting stories from fellow travelers. So one guy in the airport heading home to Saskatchewan as well, the resort they were on did close while they were there. And they had to walk to the neighboring resort to eat and to use the pool. Like, I think we got one of the last scheduled flights out of there. So Wednesday morning, we were leaving like at dinner time. The day we left, there was a lot of panic. And I'm just so thankful we got on that plane. And the plane had come empty to come get us, to bring us home. So when we got back to Saskatoon, I don't think we've ever been more thankful to get home than we did that time. Wow. And then the morning we get back, so Thursday morning, our travel agent calls us and she says, oh my gosh, I'm so thankful you guys got home. They closed your resort today. They closed the resort. And we're like, what? Like, they didn't tell us anything that they were gearing up to close or anything.
When you say panic, what did that look like? I mean,
maybe panic's a strong, maybe panic's a strong word, but people were like worried about how they're going to get home. And it was more so just when I would talk to them.
So you get back home, you touched home base, you're safe. Then what happened?
Okay. So, we got home at midnight on Wednesday the 18th, and our plan was our kids were supposed to be put to bed at our place, and then we would wake up with our kids. And I had full intentions of quarantining, but I was going to quarantine as a family with our children because I didn't really feel at that time like a huge amount of risk. I knew it was important to quarantine, but I didn't really think it would happen to us. So I didn't really think too much about having my family at home. But then our friends we were traveling with, her mom was like, you can't have these children back. You guys have to quarantine without your children. And she kind of made us think, well, geez, should we be having our children back? Like, what's going to be going on? And then it just started escalating that we started realizing how high risk of having COVID we really were. And we needed some time. Oh, and it started becoming mandatory that people quarantined after travel too. And we started figuring like, well, what do we do? Like, and because Natalie is high risk with her epilepsy and my middle son has asthma, we started thinking, well, geez, we better be a little more careful how we handle this. And we better take time to call our doctor in the morning and the right people in the morning to fully understand like what kind of risk is going on here. So we asked our caregivers to keep our children one more day so that we would have time in the morning to make all the right phone calls needed to make an educated decision on how to handle this quarantine. And I just kind of thought, oh, we'll make the phone calls and then we'll get our children back. So we call our doctor, and our doctor knows us very well because of Natalie's conditions. And she says, no, you do not take your children back home. And I'm like, what? And she's like, no, you're too high risk. You can't do it. Don't do it. I know it's going to be hard, but you just can't. So that was really hard because, I mean, a holiday is awesome, but it's still hard to get through 7 days without your little kids. And then to be told you have to go through another like couple weeks, that was a hard pill to swallow. But in my head to get through, I just kind of told myself, oh, we'll just get through 5 to 7 days. That's when most people show symptoms, and then we'll just get them back. So in my head, I kind of told myself, oh, just a few more days and then we'll get them back. So we kind of came home with the sniffles, you know, but I didn't really think too much of it. You know, traveling and change of seasons can do that to a person. And then I kind of started getting a head cold like 5 days in. And again, pretty minor. I didn't take any medication for it. But then we called the doctor because we're like, well, what do we do? Do we get tested? Do we not? We were kind of getting pressured maybe to, is it time to get our kids back? And in my head, I kind of thought again, oh, maybe we should just get tested to make sure these sniffles are nothing. And then a negative test, we can get our kids back. So we call our doctor. I think we called her Wednesday, and she was doing phone consults for her patients. And we kind of talked it over, and I kind of told her some of my symptoms. And she's like, well, yeah, by rights, we should test you because you've traveled. You're high risk. So, like, I didn't have a cough. I didn't have a temperature. I didn't have body aches. So I went and got tested. It was a Friday. And Monday, I got my results that I was indeed COVID positive.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. And I think my doctor couldn't believe it either. She's like, holy shit.
Boom, there it is. Mic drop. COVID.
COVID positive. And my husband went and got tested that Monday as well. So he kind of was lagging a day or two behind me. And even with him going to get tested, I really thought there was maybe a mix up and his test would come back negative and mine would be like a mix up because I really didn't have a lot of symptoms. I didn't once take pain medication, cold medication. I just kind of had like a minor head cold and stuffy nose and stuffy sinuses. That was kind of the worst of it. My husband did get a little bit of a cough and he had a little bit more chest congestion. I never really got the chest congestion. So yeah, that was a whole new ball game now that we actually had it, but in a way it was kind of a blessing in disguise because I felt like, okay, all this quarantining away from our children is now worth it. And having to go another week is now like, it gave some sort of like, it kind of made it a little more concrete, like why we had to ask this of our caregivers and make it work. Rather than just sitting there going, oh, maybe we have it. We knew for sure we had it and we had to make that choice for our family. And it was the right decision. It wasn't an easy decision, but it was the right decision to make. And we were no strangers to doing what's best for our family and our children, even if it's a hard decision. We have lived a lot of our lives in fear of my daughter getting sick. What people are experiencing right now with fear of getting sick, we live that all the time. So we are no strangers to this. You know, we've canceled plans before. We've stayed home. We've, you know, we do all the things to try to prevent illness in our home. Not a lot has changed for us in that sense. So fast forward, we have our children home. I must have done a pretty good job of disinfecting our home because so far none of them have had the fevers or whatnot. So now we are all together as a family, isolating as a family. So we made it through.
That's incredible. So give me a snapshot of where you guys are at now. You got to stay on the farm. It sounded like you were working with some new medications that were working with Natalie. You're immune from COVID.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful, happy ending here. Tell me where you guys are at right now.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people, when you see people out and about, or, well, when I say out and about, like going to pick up mail or just bump into somebody
outside the house.
Getting groceries. They're like, oh, how are you handling everything at home? And I feel kind of guilty saying this, but honestly, things are great. Like, we're doing good. Life has not changed for us on the farm. And in fact, things are even great because, you know, living on the farm, we're often bending and stretching and shifting our lives to keep up with our urban friends, you know, driving to this, driving to that. The whole world is like catering to us staying at home. Everything's available online, you know, like I usually do most of our shopping for clothes or birthday presents online anyways. And now more businesses are offering online ordering, free shipping. Like, to me, that is completely in line with our lifestyle. I don't have to run to any sports events. I didn't have to worry what kind of birthday party to have for my son. Things are good right now, isolating on the farm. There's new life on the farm. We had a baby lamb for the kids. So they've enjoyed being outside. Being that it's spring, there's lots going on with seeding. My daughter's having a great month. We've been tweaking her medications. So we're in a really good place with her right now, and I hope it stays that way. But yeah, I think we're really enjoying this time right now, and I feel so, so fortunate to be on the farm during this COVID time. I feel for those people in the city. They don't, like, you know, they even shut down playgrounds. How hard would that be to try entertain your child in town, in your house, you know, like, being on the farm, we have no shortage of things to go and do. And for that, I'm really thankful for.
That is awesome. Tiffany, that was really good. I'm just going to ask you a wrap-up question.
Yeah.
You share a lot of really powerful stuff that's incredibly personal, both about your daughter and about how you're feeling and how you're doing and life on the ranch. And, you know, you're really working hard to share a lot of the good news story of agriculture. What do you hope to achieve by sharing your story online?
I guess there's a couple different answers to that because I have a separate page on Facebook for my daughter, and that is called Natalie Shine Bright, if anybody wants to follow along her story. On that side of things, I just want to be able to share, I would like to be able to offer a glimpse into our lives for, you know, a lot of our friends, our family, and anybody else wants to follow along. I just want to share a glimpse in our lives because living in a small community, I think a lot of people notice, oh, Martinkas aren't at this, or Martinkas have to leave early, or whatever. Like, I just want them to understand that we face some significant challenges that will impact our life and maybe our participation in the community. And I just want them to better understand where we're at. And, you know, I would like to advocate for children with epilepsy. It's not an easy life for those children or those families. And then on the other side of things, I have my Instagram account called Prairie Pretty, and I love sharing about our life on the farm. And, you know, I think it's only something like 2% of Canada's population is on the farm. There's such a huge disconnect between people and understanding where their food comes from. And we're kind of the lucky 2% that gets to live on a farm. And I kind of want to share what that looks like, and that it's not the old traditional old man in coveralls and a pitchfork, that it is really fun, and share the good news side of it. I think in ag we tend to play the poor me story, and I think we need to change that narrative and show how fun and exciting, and show all the enjoyment we get from it. It should be a happy story, you know, not a poor me story, because I think we have one of the best professions in the world on the farm, and we're lucky to do that. So that is why I like to share on Instagram a little bit more about ag, and I hope to gain is more of an urban following, so then I can share little glimpses of ag. If I were to lead with ag, you mostly get ag followers. So I'm trying something a little bit different. We'll see if it works or not.
That must mean a lot to other parents that are going through that situation, or if someone is just at the beginning stages, right?
Yeah.
Of that, like in your Facebook group, you must have a lot of you have a lot of interaction with people that are going through the same thing.
Yeah, actually, so I knew about Dravet syndrome before my neurologist even brought it up. And I searched right away on Facebook for a Dravet group. And I found a Dravet parent group. And there's a couple thousand parents on there from all over the world. So this group has been super helpful for me. They've kind of prepared me for kind of things that were to come. And a lot of those parents follow me on Natalie's page now. And then there's also a lot of just like other special needs parents that maybe don't have Natalie's syndrome, but are just special needs that really appreciate what I'm sharing as well. So it's nice kind of having, as a special needs parent, you need to connect with others because they're the ones who understand. No one will fully truly understand what it's like until you have to go through it. And I try remember that too when it comes to like my friends and family. You know, just there's sometimes some actions you wonder why they're doing this or that, or not doing this or that, but you just try understand that people don't truly know until they've been through it.
Oh, I can only imagine. Actually living through it. I mean, I'm really fortunate. All our kids are healthy, and it always just amazed me. It just seemed like such a miracle that they're all healthy. And it just, if you got health issues, it just, everything else takes on, it just probably turns down the volume on everything else. I can only imagine.
Well, yeah, it was a huge eye opener for me, like experiencing this world, and it makes me a little more sensitive to, you know, I didn't even realize like the extent of people with, for example, diabetes. You know, I just thought, oh yeah, they just live with it. They take their medication, but there can be so many complications with something like that. And that's super common, diabetes. So yeah. And because this syndrome is medication resistant, they've like, we talk a lot about even what medications to use, what dosages everybody at, because the neurologists aren't even like, some neurologists don't really even have a clue. I'm lucky we've had good neurologists, but some of these people, I feel for them, like their neurologists don't have a clue. So they go to the group and say, oh, what do you guys think of this, med dosage? Is this going to be too high? And some parents are like, yes, you have to talk with your doctor about this. So it's kind of like, it gives us a place to discuss, and then we can bring to our doctors. And, you know, when her epilepsy started and medication wasn't working, my first thought was to like blame the doctor, right? Why isn't this neurologist like on it? But then with this group, I just realized, okay, this is just the nature of this epilepsy. He is doing all the right steps. And in fact, I kind of flipped to appreciate his method, because he wasn't quick to just throw meds at her. So many doctors just start throwing meds, and before you know it, your little one-year-old is on four medications or something. But he never did that. And that's why we got on keto at 11 months old, to avoid using more and more medications. So that, it's just such a tricky, like, it's a very tricky thing to live with, because it's a balancing act of, do you add medication or increase dose to control seizures? But then these medications can have such negative impacts too. So then it's like, well, which is worse, more meds or more seizures? And you gotta, because she has two main kinds of seizures. One is the big tonic clonic that sends us to the hospital, but those ones have been very well controlled, and those ones are with fever.
Okay.
Then she has this small little drop ones. So it's like she just drops, or she'll fall to the floor. And those ones are almost worse to manage, because I didn't want her even walking around the hockey rink, because she would drop to the floor on the cement floor, and that's dangerous too. Those have been the hardest ones to control.
Oh man. I can't imagine it. Like I can't bear to see my 4-year-old daughter unhappy about anything. Yeah. Even when it's like self-inflicted, like when she's just like in the corner, I'm like, no, don't be sad. Like to go through some real pain. But how does your daughter deal with it? Like, is it just part of life for her?
Honestly, like, she is so resilient. Like, oh my God, she's just the happiest little thing. And those like drops, they just pick up and carry on playing like nothing happened. Mm. She will kind of have moods and get irritable sometimes, I think, when there's seizure activity flaring up. I don't think, like, it can't make her feel good.
No.
Yeah, so the ketogenic diet therapy, when we did that, it definitely did help. And for some kids, it's like the answer, which is so cool. But it didn't help enough. Like, we were a year in, and she had a bad seizure, and it was what happened? We were a year in, I tweaked the diet as much as we possibly could, and it was still time to start this new medication, which is only for her genetic mutation. And that is the one that took away the tonic clonics, the big scary seizures, that new medication. So once we started that new medication, I was like, okay, this med did more for her than the ketogenic diet did. I'm getting really super stressed out doing the ketogenic diet, because our neurologist had a dietitian, and the dietitian would send me, like, her meals were a prescription. And I had to weigh every single thing that went into her mouth out by the 0.1 of a gram. So her dietitian would send me little meal recipes all the time. Like, for example, it had chicken, olive oil, and broccoli. So I'd have to weigh out the chicken to the 0.1 of a gram, weigh out the oil, weigh out the broccoli, and then that was her meal. So, and she had 5 meals a day. Wow. So I would weigh out every single meal, or, you know, breakfast would be like eggs and butter with a little spoonful of applesauce. And I'd have to weigh that out every day. And it was just getting really wearing on me. And if I could have handled it, I would have liked to continue the ketogenic diet, because even if it's not fully controlling seizures, there are such huge cognitive benefits that some of these kids can can get through this diet that, and that's a whole nother fight, is keeping them cognitively at their best, because they start to decline. Some go to kindergarten, no problem. Some become seizure free. I don't think we could ever say they're cured because it's a genetic mutation, but they can find seizure freedom. So Natalie, I think, is a little more on the, towards the mild end. She's not the most mild, but she's on the mild end, I would say, because she's still laughing, playing, interacting. We're working on potty training, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's honestly, I don't even, when I share my story with just people asking, and I remember like when we were in the thick of it and people are asking how we're doing, and I would just be explaining like what we, well, we were in the hospital, or just explaining a little bit, they would be crying and I would feel no emotion. Like I would have no emotion almost, but I think it's because I was so numb those early days. And I think this is the year that I've finally, because she's doing better, this is the year I've finally been like allowed myself to kind of feel things. And it's like our head is finally coming up above water, that where you can kind of finally process like what we just went through.
That's awesome. And I really appreciate the stories that you're telling. I know for all of us, when we hear a story like yours and what you've gone through, it puts things into perspective so we can gain some more gratitude in our day and forget the poor me narrative. And these are all just stories that we tell ourselves. And you got an awesome story of resilience and overcoming a lot of things. And it sounds like you're doing great right now. That's amazing to hear. And keep sharing your story. And I appreciate you coming on the show, because I think people are going to be very interested to hear how you've overcome and gone through all these things. So you should be proud. You should keep telling your story. And I know you're having an impact. I know that I started watching you because of that. And we've got to know each other a little bit through our health and fitness group online too. So I look forward to hearing more from you, Tiffany. And thanks for coming on the show and sharing your story of resilience.
Thank you so much for having me. I do enjoy sharing. So it means a lot that you had me on, Dan. And it's been good to get to know you as well.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.